It's time now for KMTS Connections, a public affairs program from KMTS News, heard weekdays around 12:30, bringing you interviews and information regarding local nonprofit events and city and county services from Aspen to Rifle. Once again, it's Gabe from the KMTS Morning Show. Mary Cloud and Megan Hurley from Riverbridge Regional Center are here with us today. April is National Child Abuse Prevention Month, and in order to bring more awareness to child abuse, at the beginning of the month, on the lawn of the courthouse in Glenwood, they read some names of victims of child abuse that they worked with in 2000. This is what it sounded like.
Jane Doe, age 4. Jane Doe, age 7.
So as you can hear, obviously referring to all those victims as Jane or John Doe, but the impact is still there. You hear those ages that, innocent ages that you would hope wouldn't have to deal with some of the things that they've dealt with. Mary Cloud, of course, we've talked to before. You know her name from past interviews. She's the assistant director at Riverbridge. Megan Hurley is mental health coordinator. And as you would imagine, mental health really is where the healing and the recovery from a lot of these issues comes from. As, that may be down the road, but it's still so important to try and help these young people get back to life as they knew it, or how, I guess, more appropriately, how life will be from now on. Megan, a lot of times when we talk about Riverbridge, we talk about the process, we talk about signs for average members of the public to look for. We talk about the process that you go to as you advocate for these kids and their families after some kind of abuse happens. We have not talked a lot about the mental health process that that happens.
Yeah, I think that sometimes that's the hard part to talk about. And I think a lot of the reason for that is that there's so much stigma around sexual abuse. And I really find that a lot of people have this idea that it's so shameful and it's just something you can't recover from, that a person's innocence is lost, they're forever damaged. And I really like to push back against that because I see so much resiliency in the kiddos that I work with. And I'm just honored to be able to see all of the healing that happens. And I really do believe that this is something that youth can recover from. And so I'm pretty optimistic when it comes to mental health, but the key is getting them in the door. And that's the problem.
Is it still, I know that, we've been talking about this for years about the problem with increasing the reporting rate. I've heard up to 20% of sexual assaults in general, and I'm sure that that's probably an even lower number for kids. With all of the public awareness over the last, particularly the last several years and over the last 30, 40 years, I remember having conversations about this even when I was a kid, but there's still a problem in getting the reporting from the very beginning.
Yeah. I mean, no doubt there's been progress. I think we've come a very long way, and it's been like the just creation of children's advocacy centers in general kind of puts a face on child abuse, and we have an actual building that this is enough of an issue that we have hundreds of kids that come through every year. And, so I think that we're talking about it a lot more, but I do think the stigma is still there. And a lot of kids what we see consistently in the children that come through here is that there's been this element of secrecy. It's extraordinarily rare that a child is, say, for example, sexually abused, and that they immediately go and tell a parent about it and have it be reported. There are lots of different levels where that breaks down. Sometimes it's the child, most of the time it's the child's inability to talk about it children still feel really responsible. They feel like they've done something wrong. And so that shame prevents them from telling. But even still, even when kids do tell, sometimes it's a dead end disclosure. And so they tell the parent, and maybe the parent, you know, thinks, well, we can handle this on our own. We won't, don't want to make a big deal out of it. And we'll just make sure you never see this person again. But unfortunately, that allows that abuser to have access to other children. And it also prevents their child from getting the mental health treatment that they need. So I feel like once they come in and have an interview and they come to the River Bridge, we're pretty good at getting them connected to services and using treatments that are highly effective that they can get better. But it's just getting kids to tell in the first place that seems to be the hard part. And that's what we see with the kids that come through is that, you know, it's a 15-year-old talking about something that happened when she was 8. Those kind of stories.
Which is still, if I remember correctly, within the statute of limitations for abuse, if I'm correct. Actually, they're working to expand, if I remember correctly, the statute of limitations to actually remove statutes in a lot of cases where it doesn't matter how long it's been. If you can prove it, you can still get some kind of legal remedy, I guess, for lack of a better term. And do you have a chance to talk with victims and see how they feel about that? I suppose from a clinical level, you're probably working with each individual victim and just trying to do the best you can and meet them wherever they are and get them to a point where they can move on with their life.
Yeah. I mean, pretty much all children that come through River Bridge, there's that potential for criminal action if a disclosure is made, and they all fall within that statute of limitations. It's more complicated when we're talking about adults that never reported as children, and so you know, I don't work with that a whole lot since I'm here at the CAC, but you know, it's just getting kids to come forward and talk about it is the first step in recovery as far as their mental health. And the prosecution and all that is really secondary because unfortunately a lot of kids don't see justice. These cases are extremely complex. They're very, very difficult to prosecute. And so those numbers are just really not what they should be. And that's just, it's, I don't know. I think it's just the fault of society and a lot of misinformation about sexual abuse and what people on juries expect to see from a case. You know, they want DNA evidence and they want video, you know, capturing, you know, the abuse, and those rarely happen. So they're tough cases to prosecute and to win. And so, you know, I don't hinge recovery and resiliency at all on getting justice, because otherwise we'd have lots and lots of disappointment. So that's kind of a separate thing. And I really help the survivors that I'm working with to know that you absolutely can get through this and recover from this and be resilient. And we're not going to worry about that outcome at this point.
Speaking of recovering and working with survivors, you actually wrote a book for kids.
I did. Yeah. I have a children's book called Who's the Boss of This Body? One of my main goals is working myself out of a job. And so I've been at the River Bridge since we opened in 2007. And I'm really kind of tired of seeing how many kids are sexually abused. And so I started back in 2010, I started a class for parents called The Top 10 Things You Can Do to Prevent Child Sexual Abuse. And so for many years, I did that class. And the question that came up the most is, do you have any book recommendations? And there are a lot of books out there, but, you know, there's flaws with some. Some are okay, but just didn't have everything. And so I just decided to have a book that really goes kind of hand in hand with what I'm teaching to parents in the class. And so I think it's a great way to have that difficult conversation with children about sexual abuse prevention without teaching kids about sex, because I think that that's parents' number one concern is we're not ready for that talk. And I really believe that a two-year-old is ready for the sexual abuse prevention talk. It's a very different talk. And so the book kind of guides parents through that process. And then for them to have more support and information, my class is actually now recorded in a podcast that people can just listen to at their convenience. And so if you go on the Riverbridge website and just Google Riverbridge and podcasts, it will come up. The top 10 things are in 10 separate episodes. Each one's about 20 minutes long. And it's just really basic, good information about sexual abuse and how to prevent it. I mean, with knowledge comes power. And I really believe that parents that listen to that class are going to be in a much better place to prevent this from happening to their kids. It's also available on iTunes. If you have an iPhone, you can just Google the 10 things to prevent child sexual abuse. So,
and again, that website is riverbridgerc.org. And the book, Who's the Boss of This Body? Where can folks find that?
That's on Amazon.
Okay, so you can actually
find
that.
And it's also available in Spanish.
Bueno. Again, at Amazon, just search for Who's the Boss of This Body by Megan Hurley.
Yes.
And again, the podcast at riverbridgerc.org, and you can also find it on iTunes. And my experience is if it's on iTunes, it's probably on all the other podcast platforms as well, Google, and well, there are a ton of them now, but you get the idea. And you can always Google Riverbridge Podcast, too, and get that. And tell me what the title of that was again, Megan.
Top 10 things parents can do to prevent child sexual abuse.
Again, the website is riverbridgerc.org. We'll take a quick break. And as I mentioned, April is Child Abuse Prevention Month. And so there is a fundraiser going on this month, a virtual fundraiser, if you will. We'll talk about that in just a minute. You're listening to KMTS Connections. Welcome back to KMTS Connections. Again, this afternoon, we're visiting with Megan Hurley and Mary Cloud from Riverbridge Regional Center. Again, the website is riverbridgerc.org if you want to learn more about what they do and why it's important. As we mentioned, April is National Child Abuse Prevention Month. And to really drive that point home, the beginning of the month on the lawn of the courthouse in Glenwood, they read some names and ages of young people that had that Riverbridge had dealt with and worked with last year. Here are some more.
John Doe, age 5. John Doe, age 13. Jane Doe, age 11.
Again, those are names and ages of young people that Riverbridge worked with last year. Each one of those has a story that a vast majority of us will never know. A small group of people, family members, and professionals understand to a greater degree what each one of those young people went through. And yet the point is well taken that those all in some way will be working toward recovery. And again, it's Riverbridge Regional Center that helps them get through those steps and those stages. Again, Riverbridge is obviously a nonprofit, and as a nonprofit, have to have a certain number of fundraisers. I know, Mary, in the past, you've had a big food-related fundraiser, which has always been so much fun, but still not quite to the point where we can get together, you know, as easily as we once were able to. So this month, tying it in again with Child Abuse Prevention Month, you've got this fundraiser called Find Your Voice. Explain what this is all about.
Yes. Well, as Megan was saying, is that part of her position with mental health therapist is to help children heal from their abuse. So a lot of the services that we provide here at Riverbridge helps children and helps the non-offending family members to heal and move on positively with their life. So the Find Your Voice fundraiser also came out from that mission, that idea that we want to help children and adults in our area, in our communities, to find inspiration, hidden talents, learn something new, explore their creativity, and just have some fun as well. So we have a series of virtual workshops that are all month long, mostly in the evenings around 5:30, 6 p.m. And there we have wonderful community members that are teaching the classes. And we have courses in ballet, American Sign Language, yoga, watercolor painting, jazz dance, creative writing. We have a large variety of workshops. Workshops are $15 each, and all proceeds benefit River Bridge and the children and non-offending family members that come to us for services and support. I have to also thank very much our sponsors, Ace Hardware of Carbondale, Alpine Bank, Fairway, Independent Mortgage, and Roaring Fork Furniture. Many of them have been long supporters of fundraisers with River Bridge. And fundraising is an important part of being a nonprofit. It helps to ensure that our services remain in our community for years to come.
And again, you can learn more about those workshops at riverbridgerc.org. It sounds like these are scheduled, so they are not, unlike the podcast, which we talked about in the previous segment, these are actually scheduled workshops. So if you're interested, you think you might be interested in taking one of these workshops, go to the website and check it out, sign up. If there's more than one, obviously there's a little bit of a discount for five classes, or if you want the all-access pass, there's a bit of a deal there as well. But again, riverbridgerc.org is where you go. And it sounds like this is like a Zoom kind of thing, where you'll have like a presenter that's presenting the workshop, that kind of thing.
Yes, all the workshops are held through Zoom, and they are live, but they will also be recorded. So if you are interested in attending one, but can't make it that night, but want to check it out, you can still register and you'll still receive the link for the recording at a later time as well. So again, the workshops, they're just a great time, a great way to again, find inspiration, learn something new, and have a little fun. It kind of matches with what our goal and our mission is as in River Bridge, is to help our children heal and recover from their trauma in finding their a positive way to move forward.
And again, the website is riverbridgerc.org. And Megan, from a mental health standpoint, whether you're recovering from trauma or not, I want to say that generally speaking, getting out and socializing, well, getting out or staying in and socializing or learning something new, it's all healthy. It all helps the mental health, and actually physical activity especially helps you just kind of, as my dad would say, reset everything so that, you know, you're not flooded, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, really important to mental health is connection. And, you know, I mean, I think there's that potential right now, just what we're going through with living through a pandemic, which is something that all of us did not really anticipate, was unexpected. And any time that there's this loss of a sense of control and feeling powerless, it is potentially traumatizing. Right. I mean, just it's difficult how to define trauma. And, you know, it really is that moment of being rendered powerless, whether it's burning building or active shooter or sexual abuse or whatever it is, you're powerless in that moment. And so, I mean, there's always different levels depending on life experience and your resiliency factors and how traumatized you will become by that. And so I think that we have a lot of potential to really come together and get through this because of the universal experience. That always helps. Like if you're all in it together, which we all are, you know, I think that we can work together and really recover. One of the biggest things that victims need to understand is that they're not alone. And so I think the fact that we know we're not alone in this pandemic, we're all trying to get through it. So it is potentially traumatizing, though, for different people. It's going to have different impacts depending on loved ones that have passed or your own personal health conditions that might render you more vulnerable. It's a tough time for a lot of people. And what we know about resiliency is the number one thing that determines a person can recover from a trauma is their support system and connections with others. And so it's this complicated situation. On one hand, it's a good thing that we're universally going through it together. But on the other hand, we're so isolated that we're kind of cutting ourselves off from our supports. So I think that for right now, we got to do what we need to do. And if that's connecting via Zoom, then here we go.
That's what, right, exactly. Again, you can find out more about those workshops at riverbridgerc.org. Again, through the month of April, they've got a number of them. Mary mentioned creative writing, dancing, yoga, art, cooking, and a lot of others. Again, it's $15 per workshop. If you find five that you're interested in taking, it's $50 or $75 for the All Access Pass. Plus, you'll get a free gift if you do the All Access Pass as well. Again, riverbridgerc.org is the website where you can learn more about those workshops through the month of April, which again is National Child Abuse Prevention Month. And again, going back to the beginning of the month on the courthouse lawn, here's some more of those names and ages.
John Doe, age 13. Jane Doe, age 14. Jane Doe, age 14.
Again, all of those names are young people that were helped, that had contact with Riverbridge last year. There were a ton of them. We'll talk more about that and talk about their steps to recovery when we return. You're listening to KMTS Connections. Welcome back to KMTS Connections. Again, this afternoon, we're talking with Mary Cloud and Megan Hurley from Riverbridge Regional Center. Again, this is Child Abuse Prevention Month. At the beginning of the month, they planted pinwheels in the courthouse lawn in Glenwood and read some names of children that had been affected by abuse in 2020.
Jane Doe, age 7. Jane Doe, age 10. John Doe, age 6.
As you listen to those names and ages, I don't know about anybody else. I find myself going back to when I was that age and thinking, I had no idea. And I know a lot of these are talking about sexual abuse cases. I would have had no idea about, you know, the birds and the bees, if you will, to use that old metaphor. And so that kind of brings it one step closer to understanding how important it is, number one, obviously, to help these young people recover, Megan, but at the same time, how important it is so that they can actually tell what happened, so that they can express what's going on, so that they can get that help. We don't want to get too far in the weeds here, obviously, but in the mental health business, my dad once told me anything that gets buried alive. In other words, if you don't deal with it, it's going to continue to get worse and it's going to continue to affect you whether you realize it or not. And that, I'm not sure if you would say that's the biggest reason why kids need to report abuse, but I think it would certainly be one of the big reasons why kids need to report.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that it needs to be reported, first of all, to stop it. I mean, generally, sexual abuse and domestic violence, which is what we see the most of, it's progressive and it just usually gets worse. And so, you know, it needs to be reported to be stopped, but also what you're saying about the things that are buried. My favorite Mr. Rogers quote is, what's mentionable is manageable. And so there's so many emotions that go along with having endured a trauma like this and pretty much enduring it totally alone. Like I said, you know, we need to have supportive relationships to help us recover from things. And so often when children don't tell, they're cutting themselves off from the thing they need the most, and that is support, right? And so in order to get through it, they need to be able to talk about it. And so the best way we can give them permission to do that is to not be afraid to talk about it ourselves, to acknowledge that this exists. And, you know, I think something simple like going by the pinwheels, and you have a five-year-old that's like, well, what are those for? Oh, well, you know what? Those are for these kids that, I don't know if you realize this, but there are a lot of kids that sometimes this something funny happens, and there are people out there that they want to look at or touch a kid's private parts, or make a kid look at or touch their private parts. And it happens to a lot of kids. And so, you know, we want kids to be able to talk about it. And so those pinwheels are for all the kids that have talked about it. Something simple like that. You're not giving them all the birds and the bees talk. It's just acknowledging that this happens to a lot of kids, and gosh, they're brave when they talk about it.
And I appreciate what you said from a parent's standpoint, that there's a difference in having a conversation about protecting your body. You know, the book is Who's the Boss of This Body, right? Yeah. I appreciate what you said about that. You know, my girls are 26 and 25, and I'm still not ready to have that talk. So I appreciate you saying that it's not the same talk, and it's definitely not the same detail and the same conversation.
Exactly. It's really just acknowledging that we have sexual parts. Those are the parts that define the sex you're born with, and those parts we cover up when we go to the hot springs. We put bathing suits on them because they're private, and that nobody has the right to look at or touch them. And honey, if anybody ever does that, I want you to be able to talk to me about it. It's really the gist of what they need to know.
Again, Megan wrote a book. It's called, as I mentioned, Who's the Boss of This Body? You can find it on Amazon. And if you also want to look for the podcast, it's a 10-part podcast, about 20 minutes each, that will kind of follows the course of the book and gets into the content of the book a little bit deeper. And that podcast, just search for River Bridge Podcast, and you should be able to find that. Again, riverbridgerc.org is where you can find out about the Find Your Voice fundraiser, those workshops that are ongoing through the month of April. You can find more about and purchase those. They're all Zoom meetings, and they are scheduled, so it's not an on-demand kind of thing. So if you're interested in taking one of those, check it out sooner rather than later, and you'll have more opportunity at more variety. Again, per workshop, it's $15, $50 for five classes, or $75 if you want the entire month. Whether you take advantage of all of the available offerings or not, you're still helping out Riverbridge Regional Center. Again, we're talking about cooking, writing, dancing, yoga, creative writing, and a number of other things. So again, riverbridgerc.org. They're actually selling that through Eventbrite, but I figure Riverbridge is an easy one to remember, so I usually give that that website. Mary, any final thoughts? Anything that we didn't talk about today? I know I mentioned the pinwheels on the courthouse lawn, and pinwheels are a commonplace, something you'll see throughout the month of April, throughout the country, and I know for sure throughout Colorado. And again, they represent young people who have gone through the experiences that we have discussed today with Megan.
Yes, absolutely. As Megan said, it happens to a lot of kids. And in fact, statistics show that it's 1 in 8 children will experience physical abuse, while 1 in 10 children will experience sexual abuse before they turn 18. Last year, Riverbridge saw 240 children from Eagle, Garfield, Pickens, and Rio Blanco counties. And those are the pinwheels that we have put out throughout our area. The Garfield County Courthouse has over 300 of them, 305 for representing each child. Riverbridge and Casa of the Ninth saw last year in 2020. Pepke Park in Aspen has their display around the gazebo this week for over 200 pinwheels that are being displayed for, again, River Bridge's work in our Four County area. And we know that while they represent, each pinwheel represents a child that was seen in 2020, we also know that each pinwheel also represents a child that has already been or will be seen in 2021. So as you go by, and if you see one of the pinwheels in the various locations we have, just take a moment and kind of, you know, acknowledge and kind of hope that that child is on the right path to healing.
I appreciate that. Megan, any final thoughts from you?
No, I think that Mary's doing an amazing job out there and getting the word out to help prevent this. So thank you, Mary.
Again, the website is riverbridgerc.org. I think it's time to go for a walk. Oh, I shouldn't have said that. riverbridgerc.org. Again, you can learn more about Find Your Voice, the fundraiser throughout the month of April, as well as all the services and all the good work that they do at River Bridge Regional Center. All the best, ladies. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
You've been listening to KMTS Connections, a public affairs program from KMTS News, heard weekdays around 12:30. It's another reason we are the most listened to radio station from Rifle to Aspen.